Welcome to Health System CIO's interview with Will Landry, SVP and CIO with Franciscan Missionaries of Our Lady Health System. I'm Anthony Guerra, founder and editor-in-chief. Will, thanks for joining me.
Hey, Anthony, thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
All right, very good, Will. Can you start off by telling me a little bit about your organization and your role?
Yeah, absolutely. So Franciscan Missionaries of Our Lady Health System is a Catholic health system based out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, with 10 hospitals in the Louisiana and Mississippi markets. We also have a little over 200 ambulatory locations in the two states, 18,000 employees, and we cover five specific geographic regions within the state: the Greater Baton Rouge area, Acadiana, Northeast Louisiana, the North Shore, the North of New Orleans, and then Central Mississippi.
All right. Excellent. Very good. We're going to have sort of a security-specific chat here.
Sure.
So why don't we start off, why don't you tell me a little bit about, I don't need names, but just the structure or the positions you have in security. I don't think you have a CISO. Is that correct?
We don't. Myself, we have a senior director of information security, and myself, who operate under the CISO roles. The way I like to say, I have all the accountability and she has the responsibility.
Okay, very good. It's a big health system. I would imagine most health systems of that side are going to have a CISO. Just tell me either how it evolved not to have one and just sort of, because it is probably a little unique.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've had CISOs in the past, and we've focused on growing from within. We had some, I've been here 4.5 years and we've not had a CISO, and I don't know when they previously did. It was a few years before that, I believe. But we do have a big security team, and I have a lot of security background from different health systems and other, and from a payer and other larger, health systems as well. And so, between the both of us, we both report to our board as far as all of our cybersecurity events. And our audit leadership committees as well, too. So we're both very heavily focused on security. I'd say, at least half of what I do is like it's got at least has some focus or a piece of security involved in it. And obviously, we have a security team and an identity management team that's very large for the health system.
Very good. So, yeah, you're certainly not the only individual I know who's a CISO who does not have who's a CIO who doesn't have a CISO. But that individual is the information security officer. I believe that's something you're required to. Is that you? Isn't that
yes.
Like a specific, like someone has to be designated as the information security officer, right?
That's correct. And I am the designated information security officer for the health system.
Okay. So CIOs are going to have different levels of comfort with security depending on how they came up, right? Now, right. You came out of infrastructure, right?
That's correct.
So a lot of CISOs have come out of infrastructure because there's a real tie between understanding infrastructure and being able to do security. So there's a real tie there. But again, I'm guessing some CIOs are actually MDs, right? They came up through that way. So they're probably not going to have the security chops. They're going to want a CISO. You are very comfortable, and if you're not going to have a CISO, you're going to have to be strong with security. Does that make sense? CIOs are going to be all different and different levels of comfort with security, and then you have to build out under that based on what you're bringing to the table.
It absolutely does. And in my organization structure, I have a lot of emphasis on nursing informatics, and I have a very strong CNIO and a very strong CMIO. And the way we like the way the three of us, when we're in meetings, we feel like we can cover all areas of IT, of healthcare IT, from a nursing, from a physician, and from an infrastructure security perspective. Like when the three of us are in a meeting or meeting with our teams. And that's what's important. And I think that's what you're seeing too. When you have CIOs that come from operations or CIOs that come from, they have a lot of CIOs that come from nursing as well, or nursing or providers that come in, and they don't have a lot of the infrastructure security knowledge. I'm fortunate coming up through infrastructure. I've worked at Blue Cross Blue Shield Louisiana for a few years, and then at Amedisys as well, which is based in Louisiana. Both very large, like national, or at least Amedisys is a national home health care and hospice provider with a lot of security challenges. And I was able to work with and kind of was able to collaborate with the CISOs that we had there and was able to learn a lot from those CISOs in the past. And it's given me a really strong appreciation for what's needed in a larger health system.
Yeah, it's interesting. It makes me think of, you know, now you're seeing some chief AI officers. Not everybody seems to like that idea. In a way, the more C-suite positions you have that have anything to do with IT, you sort of keep cutting slivers out from the CIO position.
That's right? True. And that's one of the reasons why we haven't had, or that's one of the a piece of, we haven't done some of that. I mean, within healthcare, like a CMIO and a CNIO are very normal. But as far as like we've talked about, we have an AI focus group for our health system that I lead and our teams. And that's where a lot that I'm very focused on right now from a strategy perspective. And we just haven't seen the need to carve out those teams or those responsibilities. We have that all within IT or within technology or within our digital strategy groups.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and also you mentioned you have innovation under you, correct?
That is correct.
So that's kind of an interesting, one of the things that, that comes up a lot, sometimes when you're discussing the CISO reporting structure, most CISOs are reporting to CIOs. And you have this dynamic of, is that the best way? Some people, you know, picture the CIO as being very innovation driven, hard charging, and the CISO is having to be sometimes a brake on that. And if you have the CISO reporting to the CIO, you know, how do you get the brake? Can the brakes be applied if the person, you know, doesn't want the brakes applied, the person in charge? So, but with innovation under you, you are the hard charger. You are the brake. You are, you're the whole deal. So you have to balance everything. Let's talk a little bit about that.
It is a balancing act. You're exactly right. And I think that it's important to, you know, if at least in my experience or what I've had over the last 15 plus years is in those different areas, there's a balance because obviously you need, the business needs to move forward and it has to innovate and has to iterate to be successful, but you also have to stay secure and out and be compliant. Right. And there is a balance, like to be totally secure, you would just turn everything off, but you obviously can't run the business that way. And if you were like wide open, totally innovating, like totally focused on growth and innovating, you would not be that secure as well, or you're going to have some limitations in your security posture. And that's not the best position to be in as well either. So it is a balance. That's why we work as a really well as a team together. Like I mentioned, I've worked very closely with our chief compliance officer and our senior director of information security. And the three of us meet really very regularly to talk about privacy compliance and security concerns as far as in a lot of the innovative things that we're doing. And we do try to limit our risk when it comes to the data or our risk posture, right? A lot of our innovative things that we're doing or trying are either in small scopes or limited scopes and not like a total subset, you know, holistically of our entire data set or, you know, our entire environment. So
how does the dynamic play out of users want to go fast, business wants to go fast? People saying, come on, Will, we want this stuff. We want to do this stuff. And you're saying, okay, well, there's some issues here. There's some security issues here. Or, I mean, there's a million things. There's some application rationalization. Don't you have three of these? It's like my kids with the toys, right? Yeah. You got seven Nerf guns. You need another Nerf gun? How are you handling when the business wants to go fast? What are some best practices to make them understand why, you know, oh, yes, but not right now, or maybe pretty soon, or here's what's taking time?
Well, here's a couple of things. So one, we can't compromise security. So when it comes to the business going fast, which they do, obviously, and we want to be able to meet them because we're here to, you know, we're here to serve the business and to make the business more efficient and effective. That's what we're here for, right? So if we're a roadblock, then we're a problem. And so from a security perspective, we have to have a security framework in place and all of our security tools in place for us to be agile and for us to expand and for us to be able to move quickly. What we've found over the last couple of years, or where we've made the compromise, where we've made some adjustments, is more on our infrastructure side. We've had some kind of static, you know, not like just older style infrastructure network specifically and some server and compute as well too that we've had to be more agile about. We've moved a lot of our environments to the cloud with single sign-on offerings so that it is for us to stand up a clinic or a department, it is so much easier and faster than it used to be. And even from a networking perspective, to stand up a new freestanding clinic, our ability to do software-defined networking or to do wireless access in areas is much faster than it was 4 or 5 years ago. And some of that COVID helped us escalate some of that. We had to make a lot of changes through that. And we were like, hey, these are good changes. And we had to do this faster and faster and faster for COVID, for pandemic reasons. And we learned through some of those iterations. So our ability to go faster, we made more compromises or changes on the infrastructure side to help us do those implementations faster. We don't want to compromise on the security side though, right? We have role-based security. We have the a role-based access that we have in place, and we adhere to those where we can. Now, have we made some concessions when the risk is really low? Sure, most businesses do, but we have to evaluate all of those when it comes to that. But we do typically have those conversations with the business to talk about, what is the priority, what needs to happen first, and how fast do we really need to do it. And I have found recently, actually probably in the last year or so, instead of saying no, we can't do this, or we need to slow this down, if we say yes and we ask them if they're ready, more often than not the business isn't ready. So I've started teaching my team, don't just immediately say no, like see what their status is first, and then you may be able to work backwards from there.
That's hysterical. It makes me think of like calling a bluff in a sense.
Yes, sometimes it is.
That's great. So let's talk a little bit about this concept of investing in to upgrade the legacy technology to give you a more flexible footing so you could be more responsive to the business, right? So you're sitting there as a CIO. If you're sitting there on top of legacy technology, I'm going to put words in your mouth and you tell me if I'm right. It's very difficult to respond quickly to business requests. Therefore, you need to transition to a more cloud-based, flexible infrastructure. Then you can be more responsive. But that requires a large investment, I'm guessing, to go from A to B. And when you're trying to get infrastructure dollars, I've been told that can be a little difficult because it isn't quite the sexy, patient-facing new tool AI stuff. It's infrastructure, but yet it's going to allow you to give them things they want indirectly more down the road. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, you're exactly right about infrastructure capital. And I think we've seen a huge shift in the market, not just healthcare, but in a lot of industries in the last 5+ years. And we've migrated the majority of our compute and data is cloud-based at this time. Our EHR is remote hosted, our ERP, all of our productivity platforms are remote hosted. And so the majority of what we still have on premise that we host are legacy apps, our archive data, and our virtual desktop environment, where a good bit of our virtual desktop environment is also remote hosted now too. But going forward, it's not cheaper. But it does allow us to solve business continuity problems that we weren't going to solve on premise. And when I say it that way is, could we have solved those business continuity challenges on premise? Yes, but we weren't. It was very hard to get the capital, very hard to get the approvals to do it. And now in a more of a cloud-based model, those business continuity challenges, whether you have data in multiple regions of the country or being able to do disaster recovery as a service, we're able to do that now in these cloud-hosted models, and it's part of the package. And yes, we're paying a little bit more for it in some cases, but it's things that we did not have in the past. And I'll say doing that over the last 5 years, that has allowed us to kind of properly manage our shift from traditional heavy CapEx spend to more OpEx spend, right? Like, we've seen a significant shift in the last 5 years of CapEx of reducing our CapEx, but our OpEx has climbed, but our total IS spend has been, if you look at same store, without looking at growth, our total IS spend has been fairly flat over the last 5 years.
Okay, very good. So you mentioned business continuity being an issue. It's an issue for everyone. Certainly, you've got ransomware concerns like everyone else. When we talk about security, that's where the conversation goes. But, you know, for you, where you are in the country, it's not just ransomware, it's hurricanes and things like that. So you've got a lot of business continuity. So you're saying you had to get that solved. We had to get that solved.
We tease because we go through business continuity like hurricane planning multiple times a year. So we don't even need to do tabletop exercises. We have like the real thing, you know, can have the real thing multiple times in a season. Or where we focus like a lot of our tabletop exercises over our last couple of years has all been on ransomware events, because that's where I think our most realistic threat. We've moved the majority of our compute out of the Gulf region. So if we have if we have an actual hurricane event or power loss issues, we can still technically get through to our EMR or ERP or other systems through satellite connections or through wireless connections. So that's, and we've proven that out. And so that's been positive. I think too, what's important from a business continuity's perspective that our cloud strategy or a multi-cloud strategy in general helps to alleviate or to make better. I wouldn't say it eliminates it or it just makes it better, is that you're going to have an event. There's going to be a ransomware event, like whether it's Change Healthcare or whether it's Kronos UKG a couple of years ago. We've had impacts for almost like these different vendor events. But where we say it from a business continuity perspective, the benefit is that it's been that one application, or we have mitigated the risk, right? So when we had the Kronos impact 2 years ago, we used Kronos for timekeeping, and I actually presented to our board because we had to do a whole presentation to the board about it. And it was like our multi-cloud strategy worked. Mm. And they were like, what do you mean it worked? I'm like, we only lost timekeeping. And we were able to replace it in a week's time with a custom development app. And that's the benefit. Yes, we lost an app. Yes, we had an incident, but it was only this. It was only time and attendance. It wasn't our entire data center. And so having our EHR, ERP, our productivity platforms in totally segmented environments, totally segmented infrastructure with no admin, totally separate vendors, right? Is it more expensive? Yes. But it does also help to create network segmentation between the vendors, between the platforms, so that we mitigate our risk where possible.
So that's really interesting. And I'm just laughing because the one phrase you used stuck in my head. It worked, right? It worked. Like this is what we thought. This is what I thought. This is what we strategized. And this is what we implemented. And it worked, right? Because this is, I think, one of the fears of especially recovering from backups in an outage and some sort of ransomware. I think everybody, and you tell me, it's like, well, we hope it works.
Yes, right. Right? Well, that's the thing with the multi-cloud strategy, and you're trying to separate it out. Like the reason I was meeting with the board is because there was a conversation about moving things back on premise. It's because of this Kronos, the Kronos was cloud hosted, and all the Kronos cloud hosted customers were all affected by that incident. And I know a lot of my peers had these same conversations with their executive teams as well too. And I was happy to go meet with our senior leaders and the board and say, listen, our strategy worked. This was limited. Yes, we were impacted, but it was a small impact if you look at compared to our larger network. And this is why this is our strategy. And like once we explained it that way, everyone was like, oh yeah, you're right. I'd expect to have that conversation many more times. But and as a reminder that it does it has been beneficial. And also too with for the change, like for recently, we have a large Community Connect program where we are the vendor for our EMR with other independent health systems in Louisiana and Mississippi. And with the Change Healthcare outage that recently happened a month or so ago, some of our other partners were more heavily affected by that than us. And we were able, because we already had the contracts in place with the other providers, we were able to just flip them over to our providers or our vendors for those same services. And so we found we didn't realize that was going to be a benefit of Community Connect or working with other independent health systems. But we've seen that, we've documented it, that that's a real positive too, that if we have a bunch of our different independent health systems in our network that have different revenue cycle vendors, that we're able to move services back and forth in the event that there is a business continuity issue.
That's very interesting. Very interesting. So, you know, let's just talk a little bit about the change healthcare thing, in the sense that, you know, the lesson learned from that, you know, seems to be that what you mentioned, you were sort of in a fortunate position almost accidentally that you had other service providers, other comparable service providers already set up. So you were able to transition over to them, because that was the big problem, was you couldn't get set up on an alternative quickly. It was a very difficult setup process. So if that was the only pipe you had for payments and revenue cycle, you were in big trouble. So has that caused you to, you know, get with your team and say, where else are there points of potential risk like this?
Absolutely. We've done a full analysis. Like we had a limited scope of what Franciscan missionaries had with Change Directly. So we were impacted, but not nearly like a lot of our other neighboring providers were. And so we started looking at, okay, so we looked at our providers, our vendors, which ones are we 100% with, and which ones do we need some additional like backups with? So we've started looking at our Community Connect network and, okay, where do our partners have connectivities? Could we flip over to that? I mean, we have a use agreement now. If all we needed to do was sign an MSA or an SOW to move things over, like what are our possibilities there? So we have started specifically in the rev cycle areas, looking at all of our, all the different providers that are in our network through our Community Connect space, and seeing if there's additional pieces that we need, or where we may have too few in an area, because we have, with our partners, there are a couple that we all have the same. And so we started looking at that. It's like, do we need to diversify a vendor, between one of us, and look, or just do we add somebody to have it on contract and have it set up and ready to be able to move over? So we have started looking at that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think
you're going to find too with the change issue. I was going to say, I think what you're going to find that what comes from that is that there were a lot of us didn't know in the industry how many white labeled services Change was behind, right? So there were, you might have had a vendor and it was called X, but it was really Change doing it on the back end. And I think a lot of that came to light over the last 45 days.
Yeah, and it, you know, it's interesting. It almost requires a more comprehensive, unified view of risk, because if you have risk silos, so for example, you have some operational risk in one bucket and IT risk in another, IT security risk, you might have done your third party vetting of Change Healthcare, a huge company. They probably would have passed with flying colors, right? So you go, all right, from an IT security point, check, good. And from a, you know, but they're obviously, from an organizational risk point, it wasn't check good. It was, there's too much going through this one pipe, and right. and it would be tough. If we lose this pipe, we're going to be in trouble. So it's interesting how, to me, it requires a different way of analyzing risk. Does that make sense?
It is. And we've started having conversations about how to do that. We haven't really figured that out yet. And I don't know that we'll be able to solve that problem, but we do need to understand where it is, and understand where like our real pressure points are, so that we can work towards it. Absolutely.
Yeah. We don't want any more surprises, right?
Right.
Let's talk a little bit about identity and access management. You mentioned that before, super important issue, really important for keeping risk down, getting people onboarded, getting people off when they leave, getting permissions, turned on, getting permissions turned off, the granularity, the changing nature of it. It's easy to say this is important and, you know, IAM has to be a priority. But from everyone I talk to, it's when you get into the weeds, it's a challenge, it's a bear. So what are your thoughts on that?
I would say, just like every other health system, we have these same challenges. I think it's not like specific or unique to healthcare, but I think it is very, very prevalent in healthcare of a challenge, because we have so many contract or contingent workers that are moving in and out of the system. So it is easy for dealing with an FTE or a direct employee. Like, we know in our HR systems, we know when they're hired and we know when they're gone, and we can easily control that access. Contractors are a lot harder to do. And the contractors that are in our ERP, we can manage them that way, but we have a lot of contractors that are not in our ERP. So what we, you know, we have to go through user attestations, risk attestations, where we actually, you know, in every different user that we have in the system has a leader associated with it that we go to them and ask, is this person still need access? But we have recently started looking at, you know, contractor vendor management, our contractor management systems that we're actually deploying one now that's going to help us manage that better. But it is definitely the users leaving and users changing specifically that are not full-time employees is definitely a challenge. It is. I think I've recently seen some articles about how, you know, the importance of IAM and how it continues to grow. And I definitely would agree with that. It is, as data classification becomes as important as it is in our HIPAA and privacy. So, it is a challenge that we're constantly working to improve.
Just asking an open-ended question. We're almost out of time. Just again, on the security front, either the biggest trend you're looking at, the main thing you're working on, sort of what would be your number one thought or priority around security?
So I'll give you two things. Yeah. And they're like 1A and 1B right now, are just improving our identity access management across the board. Like we've got, from our perspective, we have some newer systems and some legacy systems combined, and we're trying to simplify that across the board for not only for our IT and our IAM team, but also for all of our leaders and end users, and to make onboarding better and offboarding better for our users. So it's really important for us going forward that we improve that system. The second cybersecurity thing that we're most important or most focused on and learning about is the generative AI pieces to cybersecurity, and it's more about how it can be used as an attack vector. And, you know, and we know that our biggest risk point, most health systems' biggest risk point is incoming email and, you know, it's phishing, right? Mm-hmm. And we know that the emails, like the attacks are going to get better and better and smarter and smarter. And so watching those trends and trying to stay ahead of those trends is extremely important to us, and seeing what type of social engineering or social phishing is going to happen from these new generative AI tools, whether it's deep, like video fakes, imaging fakes, audio fakes. We have a lot of attacks coming into our help desk for password resets. Well, if it's, you know, start using audio recordings and adjusting things from people that sound like who they are. So we've had to change a lot of our processes within our help desk to try to combat or to make sure that we're not falling for some of those attacks. But we're definitely seeing more sophisticated attacks from an email and from a call or like a help desk call in than we've seen in the past. And it's increasing monthly. So that's very important to us.
So from a process point of view, it's probably, I'm guessing it's a number one is you have to be up on this stuff. So you mm-hmm. have to be plugged into all the right places to get the latest intelligence about prevalent attacks. We know CISA's got stuff. They put out different entities in the government. There's private companies, that vendors, you can put people on retainer, all sorts of stuff. So number one is you have to know what's going on, right? And then number two is you have to either get some technology to help you combat these things or end user education. So you find out what's going on out there, what the attacks are, and you have to get that in front of your user base to say, hey, here's what's going on. I mean, at a high level, that's kind of what we're talking about, right?
Absolutely. That's one of the things that we talk to our, when we present to our board about what we're doing in the cybersecurity space, it almost always is education. That's the most important thing. We have the tools, we have the technology, and we have the people, and we have the vendors and the third parties that are helping us and are monitoring our environments. Well, what is the hardest part? And everyone will say this, our weakest link is the end user that could do something or that could voluntarily give their password, right? And that's what we're constantly having to educate our users of what's out there. What are people asking for? What are they trying to do? And that's not just our end users on the floors. That's our end users, like our help desk and our technology teams as well, too, who have elevated access and making sure that they're looking out for those attacks and any type of anomalies so that they can, you know, make sure that they're not falling victim.
Wow, that's great. Well, it's about that's our half hour, which I promised you. I try and be disciplined. The final thought, quick final thought, and this is how I always frame it up. Best piece of advice to someone in your position at a comparable sized health system. It can be security fo well, let's make it security focused. Best piece of advice to someone in a comparable sized health system in your role.
I would say to my best piece of advice would be to make sure that the security team and the infrastructure team get along and they're working toward the same goal and not working opposite of each other. I've seen it before where the teams where security and infrastructure work opposite, and it can be cultural issues or things like that within an organization, but best piece is to do whatever you can do to make sure that they're working towards the same goal and working together, and it'll be a much better operation.
That's a great piece of advice, and I appreciate that very much. Well, I want to thank you so much for your time today. This was a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you, Anthony. I had a great time. Thank you very much.
Take care.